coming. This is going to be a fun couple hours here. So I am going to talk a bit about climate change. And as I had said in the little elevator pitch, we construe reality differently. And that's very much the case with climate change because it's such a complex issue. It's been referred to as a wicked problem and also as a hyper-object in the sense that we don't ever directly see or experience climate change. We always catch a fragment of it, and then we have to interpret what we've just experienced. And so it's something that almost quintessentially can't be captured easily by our human cognitive frames. It's non-local as a global issue. It's transboundary. It's involving multiple disciplines. It's occurring on timelines that we can't conceive of easily. We don't normally conceive of multi-generational timelines, let alone, you know, deep time. It's also regarding a future that we can't even really know or approximate at this point. So how do we make sense of it? And my colleagues and I at the University of Oslo in Norway are looking into this question of the plasticity of climate change. And that's been pointed to for the reasons that I just said. There arises this multiplicity of ways to make meaning of climate change. It's been called near infinite plasticity. And there's been some people reflecting on this from various perspectives, but many fall into this notion of the myth of the given. Now, who remembers from their Ken Wilber books? What's the myth of the given? Let's hear from. Okay, at the back then. Do you want a myth of the given? Did you put up your hand? What is the myth of the given? Just remind us what the myth of the given is. Okay, sure, go ahead.
It's when we think that things and objects are lying there around waiting for us to discover them. They're somewhere there objectively, and we just stumble upon them instead of co-creating, connecting them.
Exactly. And so with climate change, there's this sense that it is understandable simply as it is, and it really isn't. So it's we're often falling into this by mistake, assuming that the notion of climate change being even the notion of climate doesn't arise until you can perceive a system. And so it's, you know, there's a lot of scientists and climate change workers get really frustrated by the people construing it as weather. Well, of course they're construing it as weather because they may not have a way to grasp a system yet, right? So we believe we need some sort of depth dimension to understand this well. And what the literature suggests is that a lot of researchers describe really clearly what people hold to be true of climate change. They can describe what meaning is made about climate change, but very little are peeling back the layers to understand why. And we believe that adult developmental psychology, although it's almost completely absent from the climate change literature, it actually has a tremendous amount of insight into what is actually going on. So one thing I've been trying to do in my writing on this is take the word stage and level and whatnot out of the picture, because as soon as you hear the word level, you think ladder. And so I've been using the Russian word, can you say this actually?
Matryoshka.
To convey the idea of stage, so that whenever you hear Matryoshka, you perceive this notion of a nested doll, so that when you come across a figure like this, you're not overwhelmed thinking ladder. But what we're doing is researching how do all these different perspective-taking capacities arrive at climate change? What does it mean to them taking any number of these matryoshkas, any number one of these stages of consciousness, and exploring what exactly changes through development and lifespan. So don't stress about this very complicated thing for too long, because I don't have that much time. But this is what I believe stages of consciousness offer climate change work. So first of all, alignment. Actually, the lights are a little bit better lower, yeah. So alignment, what do I mean by alignment? Well, to better align with the local meanings of climate change, often that corresponds with increased agency and engagement. So if we can align better, then we can kind of activate people to act on it in a better way. And then also what we call translation to, and I'm going to unpack these in a moment, so don't worry if this is not clear to you, but to create pathways for adaptation within the existing meaning-making frames that people hold. So, you know, people have spoken a lot about community-based action. I'm talking about translation-based action. From your existing way you construe reality, what is the next obvious step? And trusting in that and not trying to put on top of people, this is what's prescribed for your climate change adaptation, right? And then the third one is transformation. Interestingly, there's more and more this word transformation is being used in the climate change arena. And yet it's used variously, it's used vaguely, it's almost becoming just a buzzword. And one reason it's so vague and kind of unapproachable is that it's not really linked to any psychological understanding of transformation that we see. So by bringing in developmental psychology, we feel that we can actually get more rigor in the space around what transformation might look like. So let's take a look at some data. So this is work that we did in El Salvador quite a few years ago, and I never did anything with this project. And so over the past year, well, half a year, I've been going back to this data, looking at, it was a photo voice exercise. So people took photos and interpreted the photos. So this is what climate change means to me, photo interpretation. So we took those interpretations and did some with Terry O'Fallon and with Tom Murray, both are developmental psychology researchers. We looked at, of these statements, you know, what's going on? What's the stage of development? What's the Matryoshka, the little Russian doll that's being represented here? And fascinatingly, we found that about a third was conformist, and another third would be what you would think of as orange, so like expert to achiever, and practically just under a third was pluralist. And so that's really interesting information. This is a small, tiny community in the north part of El Salvador, super agrarian. They were particularly resilient during the Civil War. So most adults in this area, half their life had been critiquing injustice, fighting oppression, you know, really doing a lot of the work you would expect to find may produce this pluralist level of consciousness. So it was no surprise to me, but really beautiful to see the data finally on this. Anyway, if we can also look at this in terms of traditional, modern, and postmodern, and that's a breakdown. So this raises a lot of interesting questions around alignment, right? If you come in as a scientific climate change researcher, or pretty much anyone working with an NGO, you primarily construe climate change in this sort of achiever, maybe some pluralist, but not really. People still think that adaptation to climate change is largely a technical exercise. And very few are looking at, wait a second, we can move all the pieces around this room that we want, new techniques here, new varieties there, you know, some sort of thing that would help with flooding. But that never gets at the bigger drivers of what's creating climate change in the first place. That's a pluralist statement, that last part. So for the most part, you're coming in here. Well, who are you missing? You're missing a lot of the population for the fact that some are deeply conformist and don't get what you're saying. Climate change is something that is produced by God. This is for real. There was a flood in a neighboring community that took out a lot of the houses, and this is how people dealt with it. They tied a little cross on the side that was being approached by the landslide. Others are coming from a more pluralist perspective. This is in this area of El Salvador that we were working. If you had this white hand on your door, it meant the next night the death squads were going to come and you would be disappeared. This is a population that was highly critically aware. They did a tremendous amount of problematizing global issues during the war, and that does transfer to other issues such as this. And so neither of these two populations would necessarily resonate with a scientific approach to climate change coming into their area. And yet that's largely what, as I'm saying, that's largely what where the discourse is at in the climate change world. So that's the disconnect we're talking about. I think there's better alignment possible. Secondly is translation. So I told you guys I would take a bit of time to unpack these ideas. Translation has been talked about by Ken Wilber and described by Keegan, by Suzanne Krogreuter, this idea that we fill out and expand the existing stage that we're at. And it's like building, it's horizontal, it's building skills, it's translating this notion of climate change as it means to me. What does that mean in my life? And as you translate that, you kind of press it out in all directions. The photo voice work we did there helped the community, first of all, see what they knew about climate change, and then discuss as a group, what ways are we adapting? You know, what ways might we adapt? And they did it. There was no, we did never actually come in and even define what climate change was from, you know, a global system science perspective, for example. So it's edgy because you have to trust. You have to trust that they're going to come up with something that's going to work. And that's hard for a lot of people to do. We prefer our myth of the given, right? So these are just some examples. I just put this together today, but this one is, you know, there's not that many like truly magic worldview representations in the world right now, but some do exist, and I've been in some areas. This is in the Andes and the like high Amazon rainforest. This kind of a quote, Tepenos reported that the water flowing through their villages was controlled by spiritual beings inhabiting its many water sources, and these beings are submitted to a single power living in Mount Serpringia. So therefore, making offerings was really important. These pagos a la tierra, like these offerings to the earth, to a certain mountain, you know, connected to the spirits, that's climate change to them. So it may look like that they're denying it, similar to, for example, folks in certain parts of the States. And they may be denying climate change, but for very different reasons, right? So how they may deal with it would look very differently. I believe that allowing communities to carry out adaptation as it's related to their state, to their own stage, their own matryoshka, their own Russian doll, will actually create more resilient, real, committed, actionable ways forward, instead of asking them to do something technical from a modern perspective. So, time check? It's all good, okay. Yeah, and so then these are also quite real. I have to just emphasize, this modern band is really predominant, and it's kind of frustrating to us because it just unpacks it all sort of biotechnically. So this is quite a strong discourse throughout climate change, and you know, for those who resonate with it, sure, I think it could create some interesting adaptation plans. This postmodern one, it can also carry its own myth of the given around, you know, requiring people to question power dynamics, requiring people to question bigger drivers. You know, that might not be available yet. And so, anyway, the point here is that what would a translation-based adaptation look like? And that's available when we actually include levels of development in our understanding of climate change. So the third way that stages of development could be of service to our climate change work is in transformation. As I said, this word is out there, it's sort of being bantered around, it's not followed with any actual set of rigorous sort of pathway for how that even happens in the first place. I believe that this, including developmental psychology, brings with it this actual understanding of the drivers of how transformation happens. What is the dynamic around how transformation is occurring? And this subject-object shift where what you're subject to gets seen as an object to then be understood and acted upon, that's really important. And it's actually often what we don't have in climate change. People all over the world are just reacting subject to the impacts of climate change, one after another after another, and not really even grouping them to say, oh, all these things are part of this object called climate change that I can then work on. So that is an important shift to make. So this, through the photo voice, getting people to kind of peer through a camera with an inquiry question, they started to have this opportunity to make what was subject object. And this particular woman, when we, in two situations, she came to Canada and spoke a lot to her and one other woman, and did this tour around BC. And when people asked her, like, what did you guys get out of this project? She didn't have that clearly articulated a sense of it, but she's like, we could see our knowing better. We could see what we were dealing with better. And she was describing this. And then later, other Salvadoran colleagues asked her directly, what did you learn from the photo voice? And this is her quote, to see the damage done to the environment, to become conscious, to become aware of oneself. And so that, to me, wherever that's happening on the spectrum of development, that's an important moment, right? And that's what we don't have if we don't have a developmental understanding. Does that make sense? Okay, so that's really exciting to us. And it really begs the question, what is changing? What is changing through this transformative process? And so working with these other developmental researchers, more skilled than I, you know, getting to the core of this, complexity of thought, object of awareness, and time. Those are the three that I've been playing with up to this point. There's more that you could look at. But the complexity of thought relates to how many perspectives you can take on reality, right? And so at an earlier stage, which is a more concrete matryoshka, Russian doll, the complexity of thought is just more atomistic. It's more fragmented. For me, if I hear someone construing climate change in bits and pieces, I'm like, oh, okay, I get a sense of where they're coming from. Thank you. Later, reality gets a bit more subtle, and the complexity of thought becomes more abstract, more networked. So pieces in a system start to be seen. And then at a meta-aware later stage of development, the complexity of thought becomes systemic and metasystemic. So that's just one example, but there's also other aspects you could look at. The question is, that I ask of you in my last 5 minutes here, is when you have a baby in front of you who's like this small and they're reaching for something, as a parent, you almost intuitively don't give it to the child. You have it just a bit out of reach. So the child has to actually move their being and stretch to grasp it. Well, what if that's the same for us? That climate change is not within reach from our current mind, from our current matryoshka of consciousness. So what is it asking of us in our stretch to grasp this? And climate change, in this sense, gives us an opportunity to actually invite us into our own transformation here. And this is what I wanted to ask of you. If we know that the object of awareness, the complexity of thought, the scope of time, if all those things expand through development, why would we think that that is it now? Like, it's obviously going to continue, and what would that look like? What would the complexity of thought look like just a bit beyond, just a bit out of the grasp that we currently have? What would the object of awareness be? And what would the scope of time be, for example? So we're talking about the future matryoshkas to meet climate change. And these are just some, you know, some ideas that the complexity of thought is not just based in thinking, which is actually kind of slow and like irritatingly clumsy, you know, but instead it's based in awareness. How quick is that? How much quicker is that than thinking? Flexible dynamic between form and formless, transparadigmatic. The object of consciousness, the object of awareness, meta-aware is what the word that Terry O'Fallon uses. What does that mean in terms of climate change? And then in terms of the time envelope, I mentioned as we started, we don't rest in these timelines that climate change invites us into. They're at least evolutionary. They might even be existential and inclusive of the eternal. You know, what is this matryoshka that we could potentially inhabit? And so what I thought we would do for my last 2 minutes, okay, we'll take three, is if you could just circle into groups of three and just describe this. You know, if you could be that baby reaching for whatever object this might be, if in your current matryoshka, your current Russian doll, what if you could stretch to the next? What would climate change look like to you? And we'll just take 3 minutes. So you three. Would you like to just go together, maybe, you two there? And you four. So just to repeat the question for those who didn't get it, if you were to move into your next Russian doll and sit with the question of climate change, imagine what it might look like at this next stage or later stage of consciousness perceiving climate change. I heard some things, I overheard a few things that were really interesting, and I'd love to hear a bit more about it. So maybe from this group, just briefly, if this is okay. Yeah.
Sure. Well, we talked, right.
One sentence, please.
Let's see. So the ability to move beyond the mind being key allows us to potentially see the gaps in our current capacity to act and to comprehend and frame, and possibly allows for a reframe in order to see that the way we've actually framed even the idea of climate change is much bigger than we know.
Yeah, we discussed many things. One of the things we discussed, and I discussed it, is this framework is a way to expand mind and mind-body to, it can be applied to climate change or to any other hyper-object, and it just expands mind, and the way to go further, for me at least, is to identify with the system I'm expanding into and see how it thinks through me. That's what's interesting.
Opportunity for action.
No, well, we've.
Yeah, what's present, I think, for both of us is the courage, and I could really connect into what you guys shared too, that I feel like we don't have a choice. Like, it's happening to us, and I really felt into our courage and our willingness to just do what's next, to do that reach.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. I heard words like cosmic consciousness and what is spirit asking of us, and some interesting and really interesting ideas. With Terry O'Fallon, she's taking the 36 STEM sentence completion test and parsing out, I think, 6 or 7 of the STEMs and replacing them with climate change STEMs. And so we're hoping to get, she calls them specialty protocols, so you get a sense of ego development, but you also get how each stage is kind of orienting itself to climate change. So we're doing this with people in the research sample that I'm working with, but I was actually thinking it would be really interesting to get a sense of later stage views on climate change as well. And so if any of you are interested, I have a sign-up sheet just outside. So on your way out, write down your email address. I would email you with basically a little consent form online that you just sign, and then she would send you the sentence completion specialty protocol. So you get a sense of your stage, but you also get a sense of, you'd help us know how these later stages might be perceiving climate change. So you're welcome if you'd be interested. And thank you so much.